Welcome to the show. Coming up, I'll tell you why the Browns are mishandling Baker Mayfield's rookie year and why the Eagles may be getting a little too confident for their own good. Speak for Yourself starts now. Ow! Back from Hawaii. Hello and welcome. Colin Cowherd is off today, but I got some good news. Jason Whitlock is back. He's better than ever. I'm joined today by a couple of Pro Bowlers, Seth Joyner and TJ Houshmandzadeh, and longtime NFL coach Rob Ryan. Let's start in Indianapolis, where the Colts and the Ravens faced off last night, and Lamar Jackson had yet another disappointing preseason performance, going just 7 for 15 for 49 yards and a touchdown. So far, Lamar is completing about 42% of his passes and even had to admit he's not meeting his own expectations.
I came out cold. I got to learn that, just sitting down, when the vet's up, how to, stay warm through the process. And I didn't do a good job tonight. I started off slow, like I said, and completing a lot of balls I didn't like, but end up throwing a touchdown. So I just got to perform better. I don't feel like I performed at a high level yet. And just start throwing the ball. It just come out my hand loose. It's not tight spirals. It's not hitting my targets in the right area. So, yeah.
All right, I got a new nickname. I call people that cape up for Colin Kaepernick the Kaepernicks. Now I have one for Lamar Jackson's group, the Jackson Hive. Mm. They all run around defending Lamar Jackson. They talk the Baltimore Ravens into doing something stupid. He wasn't a first-round pick. The expectations on him are too elevated. That's why he's the focus of so much conversation. If he had been a third, fourth-round pick, no one would be running around talking about Lamar Jackson's a disappointment. But so far, he's been a disappointment, and he doesn't look like a guy that was worthy of the 32nd pick overall, the last pick of the first round. If I'm the Ravens, I'm concerned. He's not ready to be the backup quarterback.
I'm a Hive. Sorry.
You're in the Jackson
Hive? Oh, yeah, I'm a Hive. Me too. I'm a Hive, there's no doubt about it. We can't make this assessment off of a rookie quarterback who's only played two preseason games. The NFL, specifically a quarterback, is about development. And I've had this conversation before with both you, Jason, and you, Rob, about developing players and the urgency to win and how it's impossible, how hard it is to develop players in this league. The college ranks do not develop players the way that they used to. That means they come into the NFL needing more development, OTAs, and the lack of an off-season program really hurts the development of players now. None of these young quarterbacks that were drafted in the first round have just torn it up. They've had times where they play well, times where they play bad. And the one thing that I see in Lamar Jackson is when he's on the move, he's a much more accurate passer. He's a better quarterback throwing the ball when he's on the move than when he's in the pocket. But you have to develop that. First of all, realize you got him in with the second and the third offensive line, which means that he doesn't have that much time to throw the ball. You got to learn how to navigate the pocket, Jason.
And listen, if he's a third or fourth round pick, you throw him on the practice squad or you let him develop naturally, but because of all this hype, people want him to beat out Joe Flacco, and he's just not ready.
None of these young quarterbacks are beating out starting quarterbacks that they're playing against this year. Not a single one of them.
I'm part of the Hive, and I think this. Look, he's the closest thing to Randall Cunningham as there is. And if you remember Randall Cunningham, he came in, had his selected plays till a coach put him in on every third down. It's a little shaky. But then the next year he got there under center at first down. He's like, dang, this is great. I got a few downs to go. But the biggest thing is this guy's a special talent. And here's the thing, though. As we all know, he hasn't run any of the plays he's going to be running in his little packages to help the Ravens win in the regular season. He's going to have his own group of plays, and he's going to do fine in those plays. Right now, we never said he could read a defense. Nobody does up here. He can't read defense. That'll take time. But they do have time to develop this young, outstanding kid. In the meantime, he's going to scare the heck out of any defensive coach because
Who's
he's going to come
be
in.
Who's going to be your backup quarterback?
Number one, should the Ravens be concerned? Absolutely not. No. Just because it's too early to be concerned. It's too early. He's running Joe Flacco's offense. If he was the starting quarterback of the Baltimore Ravens, they would tailor an offense that fits him and suits him to give him a better chance to have success now. If he was running RPO system, run pass option, where some similar to what he ran in college, he would have more success. Because he is the backup or the third team quarterback, this is Flacco's offense. If he becomes a starter, they will tailor an offense, if they're smart coaches, that suits him, and he'll have success.
They already have it. From day one, they've been putting his plays in.
Well, they need to run it, because it's going to give him the confidence to show him, I can do this. If they don't run it, he's going to lose confidence in himself. Like, man, this NFL is a lot harder than I thought.
He's in developmental mode, and he's going to have to learn to run Joe Flacco's offense, not just the RPO. I don't agree with taking young college guys' offense and bringing it to the NFL.
You have to.
Because the defenses catch up too quick. He'll have 1 or 2 years of success, just like RG3, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden the bottom will
and
fall.
And when the defense catches up, he's ready now to run an NFL-style offense, because he's mature enough to understand that. You just got to get his feet wet so that he understands NFL coverages, the windows are tighter, the guys are faster.
I agree, but I like the fact that they're making him run Joe Flacco's offense. Sure. The other thing about Joe Flacco, they already know what he can do in his own type of offense. The thing that I like most is it's lit in the fire under Joe Flacco.
Oh, you're darn right.
Okay, the competition that is created, that they drafted someone, you know, 32, and everybody's talking about this guy taking my job. I know for a fact there's nothing like competition. I'll give you a story. Your dad one day, I had a bad game, I remember. I come in on Wednesday.
Yes, several, but go ahead.
Not really. But so I come in, and in my locker, there's all these clothes. And I was like, man, whose stuff is this in my locker? Oh, they working out linebackers today. Now, you talk about motivation. You talk about motivation and how competition helps to bring out the best in everybody. Lamar Jackson, just his mere presence in Baltimore, it will raise Joe Flacco's level. And
I agree with that. I like TJ's point about, you know, a little bit more of the offense towards him in terms of his confidence. All of these things that y'all are talking about would be a lot easier to do if he had been drafted in the third round, where his talents dictate. When you draft him at the bottom of the first round and you attach first round to him, and then the Jackson Hive gets all worked up and he should be challenging Joe Flacco and he's a starter and blah, blah. This kid needs a lot of development, and it's hard to develop a guy when he's a first round pick.
Well, I mean, the thing is, I disagree on his talents. I think his talents are exceptional.
The ball comes out of his hand loose, just like he
just
said.
Okay, that's great. Okay, but that's fine.
His footwork is terrible.
Okay, but
he's got happy feet.
Okay, and all he's done though, all through his college career and everything, has been extremely successful, and he'll be extremely successful in pro football when they're putting him in just a few plays a game and developing him. That's where his confidence is going to come from. And now, every day, he's going to be working against that great defense, you know, and trying to play, throw from the pocket and things off of cards.
Last thing,
every single player that comes into the NFL, I don't care whether he's drafted first round or last round, seventh round, needs to be developed. Some are more polished than others, but they all need development.
Sure. So and let's none say of them you're a linebacker ready. And you come to the NFL. They keep about 5 or 6 linebackers, maybe more. The Ravens have been keeping 2 quarterbacks. This will be new if they keep 3.
They got to keep. They have to keep.
So that's
3
a whole
year.
Different. Again, if he's in the third round, it's a lot easier to do. All right, to Cleveland, where Baker Mayfield has been the star of the Browns preseason. Both on the field and on HBO's Hard Knocks, Baker's shown flashes of the talent that won him the Heisman, but when Hugh Jackson was asked if Baker would get any reps with the starters, he went off, saying, quote, no, 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 no. Everybody's asked me that a ton of times. Why? I'm going to tell you the reason why. We're learning a new system, and I think Tyrod Taylor needs every rep he can get with the ones. I think Baker's doing outstanding with the twos. If something happens and we need to put him in there, we will. Right now, that hasn't happened. Here again. I'm talking about a guy drafted at the top of the draft, the number one overall pick by your new general manager, president, John Dorsey. And you want to go all in on Tyrod Taylor? when you're playing, and I get it, Hugh's coaching for his job. He wants to win 6, 7, 8 games maybe, save himself. I think his better plan for saving himself is developing Baker Mayfield. The guy, your GM, just went out on a limb and said he's the number one pick in the draft. I would want to, if I want to keep my job, I want to show the general manager and the guy that's going to eventually decide my fate, I can develop your guy, the number one pick in the draft. I think Hugh's making a mistake here.
Traditionally, I believe that when a player is picked in the top five, that he's that the organization is saying that he's NFL ready now, he's a starter right now. Yep. But when the Cleveland Browns decide to sign Tyrod Taylor, and pay him $16 million, you mean to tell me he's going to be a $16 million backup? No, because they had already determined that Tyrod was going to be the starter. You know, at the end of the day, John Dorsey and Baker Mayfield are hitched at the hip. They're tied together because that's his quarterback. John Dorsey didn't hire Hugh Jackson to be the head coach of the Cleveland Browns, okay? I have no problem with this because on the peripheral, what nobody's really talking about is that Hugh Jackson's on the hot seat. If they have another one-win season, he's out of there. So I have no problem with him going with the guy that gives him the best chance to win, to save his job, and to give him extra years to develop the players they have, bring in more talent, and move forward from there. I have no problem with him doing this.
I think, I know he had one win. We had 0 wins last year. But, I mean, he ought to be on the hot seat. I mean, you know, he made it this far, which is, you know, unbelievable, to be honest. You know, 1-32. I think we could have all done better than that. But, you know, I think this. I mean, I think this.
It's an advertisement.
I've been there. Great fans. They love them. Stopped anybody since I left. But the bottom line is this kid should have some, you know, work with the ones because he is going to be the backup, no question about it, until they do make a move. Right now, you know, I love Taylor, you know, as a kid because he's going to compete. He's gonna be in there. He's going to protect the team. And look, with all these first-round picks they've got on defense, they got to start stopping people, and that's their best chance to win. But Baker Mayfield should get some time with the ones because, look, you never know what's going to happen. You know, Taylor got knocked out last year, and then he got benched, you know, not his own fault, yep. But he's been injured before. This kid's going to play sooner rather than later. The only thing, I don't see the redeeming qualities of the young man.
Man, Hugh is trying to win games. Simple as that. Hugh gets fired, somebody else is going to reap the benefits of Baker Mayfield. Mm-hmm. And so Baker Mayfield will not play unless Taylor gets hurt. The problem is what you said. Dorsey wants Baker Mayfield on the field. Hugh Jackson wants Taylor on the field because he's going to give Hugh the best opportunity to win 6, 7, 8 games. That's the problem that they're going to run into if they open up. If they go 0-2, Baker Mayfield has a chance to get in the game depending Absolutely. On how Taylor plays. But they say he's getting reps with the one. Everybody knows how practice works. If you do 10 plays of 7-on-7, the number one quarterback is going to get 6 reps with the first team and the backup's going to get 4. At least that's how it's been on every team. So he gets reps with the ones every practice.
You hope so.
Every practice he's getting reps. That's how every team operates.
The only thing that I think may be happening, if there's any synergy between Hugh and John Dorsey, maybe they're trying to humble Baker Mayfield a little bit.
No, you want sure, you like that confidence in him, though. You have
that's
when
why
you're a walk-on, there's no humbling a walk-on in college. You're not humbling him. He's going to always play with a chip on his shoulder because he's always been sliding. He's always been over. I played in a situation. We drafted Carson 1. He sat the whole year behind John Kitna and had a great career.
I think that John Dorsey and Hugh Jackson are on the same page. I generally believe that John Dorsey wants Hugh Jackson to succeed. Listen, if the Cleveland Browns wanted Baker Mayfield to start, he'd be starting, plain and simple. He be starting. There's no ifs, ands. If
they that's wouldn't what, have signed Taylor.
Exactly. Yeah. If that's what that's John, true. Because when they going into the draft, they knew they were going to have the 1 and the 4 pick. They knew they were going to get a quarterback. and they knew that drafting that quarterback, we could just install him as the one, as the number one. Why go and sign Tyrod Taylor to a $16 million contract if you're gonna, if you want the number one to play? It doesn't make sense.
They want to win games.
So both of these guys were on the same page. They knew what they were doing. And right now, this is about if he can win, if Hugh Jackson can win 7-8 games, and I believe they're gonna be 8-8.
Are their first two games in New Orleans?
If they can go, if New Orleans and Pittsburgh, games, then he saves his job.
My God, if they win seven or eight games,
start if they are.
I believe that's their first two games.
They may need to give the guy the Nobel Peace Prize. I want to ask quickly, and we got to be quick. I want to show the picture of Baker Mayfield in his underwear commercial. Are y'all not sick? Just very quickly, his arrogance. He hasn't thrown an NFL pass yet. Is he doing too much?
No. They paid him to
that's what
they paid
it
him
is
to endorse yeah these underwear. What's doing too much?
He hasn't done anything. Focus on your craft, then start building your
that
brand
off.
That's
the world we
you
live in.
Making it seem like he said, hey, coach, I'm not going to be able to make it to practice today. I gotta go shoot
he's
this
underwear.
He's
putting himself
commercial
out there
on,
like
man
he's the guy.
He's taking advantage of opportunities
like
provided
Joe
to
Namath
him. Man, ain't nothing
Joe
wrong
Namath
with
that. Joe Namath won a Super Bowl.
If somebody came to you right now and asked you to do an underwear commercial, wouldn't you do it?
I shower my clothes. All right, welcome back. Seth Joyner, T.J. Houshmandzadeh, and Rob Reiner back. Let's return to the NFL, where the league's new rule outlawing leading with the helmet has caused a lot of problems so far this preseason, with a mountain of flags piling up over what appears to be routine tackles. Now people in the game are starting to push back, with Vikings head coach Mike Zimmer saying the new rule could have major consequences off the field.
Yeah, it's going to cost some people some jobs. Playoffs, jobs, the whole bit, I'm guessing. But, you know, we're going to keep trying to – I mean, we haven't had any called on us so far. But, you know, I just – it's just hard to figure out. No one's ever said to me, hey, don't worry about it. We're going to call less in the – you know, or we're going to straighten it out in the regular season, or we're going to come up with a, you know, a revised rule. No one's ever said that.
I completely agree with Mike Zimmer here. I think his point is – outcomes of games are going to be turned on this penalty, and people are going to lose their mind. And then when they get to the end of the season, some coach is going to be jobless and get fired because this new rule will have played some important role in some playoff game and some regular season game that will be held against him, and he will be fired over it. I think that's Mike Zimmer's point. I don't like this rule. I'm toxically masculine, and I'm not ashamed of it. Everything about me is toxic. So I love the NFL
and
wish we could hit again.
I agree with Mike Zimmer's point 100%, and this is the scenario that I paint. If there is a coach who is on the hot seat, and he gets to week 17, and this game with 30 seconds left in the game is the difference between him keeping his job and losing it. Because if he wins this job, his team goes to the playoffs. He loses this team, his team missed the playoffs for the fourth straight year in a row. You get one of these calls, his teams lose the game, he loses his job. This is exactly what Mike Zimmer is talking about. And it's absolutely insane to think that you can ask football players to play the game of football without the head being involved in any way. And like I said before, I get the crown, striking with the crown, okay? But there's no way that you can prevent inadvertent contact helmet to helmet or the helmet striking the body.
Just putting refs in terrible positions as well. Too many subjective calls.
I said it when a few weeks ago on this show. It is virtually impossible to make a tackle and take your head out. It's virtually impossible. When you drop your shoulders, your head is going to go because your head is on your shoulders. Mm-hmm. It's what an egregious hit, something that's just like, oh my God, that should be a penalty. These penalties are calling now, number one, they will change you. They're going to change the whole concept and the way they're going to change it. We're talking about it so much. You got coaches talking about it. You have players talking about it. They're going to change the rule. They just want to bring some attention to it, some awareness for the players, stop leading with. It's impossible to make a tackle without your head at some point coming in contact with the player.
I'm not 100% sure. I love the end bump we played coming into this segment because I'm just telling you, my point of view, there's an attack on masculinity, and football is the head of the snake.
And offensive going players, if you're in the middle of the field, you catch a ball, naturally, instinct, you're going to curl up, you're going to duck your head. The defender's coming at my waist, but when I duck down, that's helmet to helmet. They can't call that because he's moving too, things are happening too quick. They have to understand that.
Let me do, before you go, I'm just telling, they want a more feminine version of football, and I'm just, I just don't think, seriously, I just don't think fans are going to go for it.
Well, I mean, TJ, why duck now? Just stay upright. No one's going to hit you.
it's instinct.
I mean, it's ridiculous.
But
I mean,
what you're saying, that's just instinct.
You know, I think what they really, I mean, I would understand an emphasis on spearing an opponent. I understand that. I understand, you know, hey, we're holding a guy up. We, you know, bounce right L's off him. Okay, that I could see. But, you know, so that's what, four plays a year? Like, we're not, you know, this is crazy. Like, guys are sacking quarterbacks with their head on their back, getting a penalty. It's like, well, he lowered his head. What? You know, there's only a certain area you can hit him already. I mean, don't ruin the game. This is the best game in the world, all right? And they don't need to put more stuff on it. They don't need to slow the game up. And exactly, the game's hard enough already to win. You know, now you're going to lose because of some penalty that should never have been called. No, I don't think so.
The question is, you, TJ said egregious. So what is an egregious hit?
If one where we're all watching the game and we're like, oh, my God.
But there are clean hits that are like that.
Right.
I've been watching some games.
A spear would be.
The crown of your helmet.
I'm not talking about the head. Now it's like if you blow somebody up and you blow them up legally, that's a penalty. And that I don't understand.
It's crazy. You can't have that. Right. I mean, that ruins the game of football.
It's what crazy. Ruins the game of football? A good hard hit?
No, I'm saying the calling.
The rolling.
If you call a good hard hit.
I'm about to come unglued.
If you look at USA Today said, in last year Bengals-Steelers game, 26 penalties could have been called last year in the first half had this rule been enacted last year. There's no way they're going to water the game down. There's no way.
Well, here's the problem, TJ, and this is where the inconsistency of these calls are going to blow people's minds.
And Zimmer's right about that. You will lose jobs.
It's the inconsistency. No, there will be a bunch that won't get called, and then all of a sudden the ref will decide, oh, this is the time I want to throw the flag, and people are going to lose their minds.
So let me give you a stat. Through 33 preseason games, there have been 51 of these penalties called. 43 of them have been on the defense. Now, I'm hard-pressed because I watch a lot of football, and I've been watching a lot of preseason games. I have yet to see one of these called on the offensive side.
Well, this happened.
I'm trying to figure out where those eight are. I don't see it. And it's slanted towards the defensive side of the ball, which is highly unfair because the offense knows where they're going, what the snap count is, all that stuff.
I mean, we're in Browns games when no one's watching.
But when you were saying, you know, maybe it's going to be called, you know, some games they won't call it tight, some games they'll call it tighter. Look, when I was in New England, we used to do it hitting receivers. You know, do business as business being done. We would take it and hit that receiver 12 yards down the field. If we weren't getting it flagged, we'd go to 15. You know, and then some guys would call it tight and you have to, you know, change the way you're hitting. Then they put that new rule in because of us, because we won a Super Bowl. I'm just saying, you know, that'd be terrible to do, but I could understand. If it's going to be this way, you're going to have to do it that way.
The point of Rob's story is his defense won a Super Bowl. That's why he called it.
That'd be two.
All right, welcome back. Seth Joyner, TJ Husmanzada, and Rob Ryan are back. Let's move to Philadelphia, where Eagles coach Doug Peterson's new book, Fearless, dropped today. Just like Peterson, the book has no shortage of swagger, including a passage where he rips the Jags for coaching scared during the AFC Championship game, writing, quote, "It made me mad because Jacksonville had New England right where they wanted them. I was screaming at the TV in my office. When they knelt right before halftime, inside I was like, I'll never do that. It fueled me." Doug Peterson's comments are 1,000% accurate. Mm-hmm. Anybody watching that game had those thoughts. I'm not sure he needed to share. I'm not sure if I want to put this out there in a book. And I look at the entire Eagles team from Lane Johnson going after the Patriots. I just see an organization that's just very full of itself. I see, again, and we're not going to have this discussion, but I just look at Malcolm Jenkins and all the things he wants to accomplish off the field. I see a team that feels like they're on top of the world and they reinvented football and they are the end-all, be-all of football. And I just think teams like that oftentimes get humbled. I just tone it down a little bit, Philly. Win a second Super Bowl, then this will seem more justified. You know, you all don't have to be egomaniacs like Seth Joyner. You could be a little humble.
If there's one thing that I know, whether we're talking sports or we're talking life, if you lack this thing called confidence, self-belief, you have nothing. I've seen some of the greatest athletes in the world lose that confidence, and all of a sudden they couldn't accomplish the thing. So I have no problem with their confidence. I have no problem with their cockiness. They are king of the hill right now. They're Super Bowl 52 champions. And until somebody dethrones them in February, they will be Super Bowl champions. I don't have a problem with Lane Johnson saying what he's saying. You just got to show up and you got to play. If you're going to bump your gums, you better be able to back it up. You better be able to walk the walk. And you hear a guy like Von Miller say, hey, that Lane Johnson guy, that number 65, he's the best tackle I've played against. Okay, Doug Peterson, it's a book. You got to have some controversial stuff in there to get people to want to go out and buy it. And if that's the way he feels, that's the way, you know, we want transparency and we want people to be real in the sports world. And the minute that they are, then we take it in another direction and make it seem like, you know, they're being cocky. But from my perspective, there's only two sides of the coin. You either uber confident or you're lacking. And if you're lacking, just like, you know, in the wild, you know, when the lions are chasing the meal, they don't go after the strongest one. They go after the one that's hobbled. They go after the weak one. Why? Because they know that they can get that one. And when you start acting that way, you become the one that's limping.
Me personally, I like that he did it. I don't see anything wrong. We haven't had a head coach do these type of things since the Ryan brothers was out there coaching. They say what's on their mind. And all he said was, why'd you do that? Everybody thought the same thing. He just put in the book. He's trying to sell books, as you said. And to sell books and to make a little money off of it, you have to put some things in there that are a little bit controversial. We're not used to seeing this. Coaches normally don't act this way. They don't say these things publicly if you're not Orion. All he's doing, I mean, number one, Mike Lombardi said he was the worst head coaching hire ever. So now it's like, I win a Super Bowl, am I still that bad?
Love Mike Lombardi, but, you know, he's not working in the NFL. Love Rex Ryan. He's not working in the NFL right now. Would Bill Belichick be saying these type things?
No, because I think Belichick, I know he would agree with Peterson here, absolutely. Yeah. But I remember when we actually won our first Super Bowl, all right, in New England, the only guy that had a book was Pepper Johnson. Another outspoken guy. But... But the thing is, look, this guy, he's bringing up the point of, look, he knows who the opponent was. It was New England. You have to outscore New England. So the philosophy going in at before half, everybody talks about that the night before with as a staff. And they say, okay, hey, look, we're going to go for it. We're going to be freewheeling here. We're going to go for it, get as many points as we can, have your fourth down plays ready. If we get the ball before a two-minute, we're going for the score. We're not going to play for the last shot. You know, which would be inching the ball to try to kick a field goal or sit on it like they did. It was clearly a mistake. Look, sometimes, and I remember this happened to Rex. Rex writes a book, doesn't realize, hey, this is, you know, it's right after the AFC Championship game, whatever, gets paid, so he does it. And then doesn't realize years later it comes back, there's some things in there that he wish he never said because it comes back. And he's like, and actually some of the things he never actually meant. You know, but, you know, that comes back. They don't ask you to do it again.
He was misquoted in his own book.
No. He said some things that he was trying to inspire other people in, and it came back and blew up in his face.
All right, to Houston, where there's a ton of excitement about Deshaun Watson coming back from injury this season. But Texans fans aren't the only ones with high expectations for Watson, with one former MVP quarterback, Joe Theismann, declaring that Watson has a chance to win the MVP award this year. When I first read Theismann's comments, I was like, man, that's too much pressure on Deshaun Watson. I think that's unfair. And then I thought it through. I was like, well, hold on. Carson Wentz in his second year was headed towards the MVP until he got hurt. And no, Deshaun Watson didn't have a full complement of rookie games, but in that handful of six or seven games he played, the guy was magnificent. I think no quarterback through seven games had ever thrown 19 touchdowns like he did. And so I don't think this is crazy to think that Deshaun Watson can win the Heisman, win the MVP award in his second year. He's got DeAndre Hopkins. He's got Lamar Miller in the backfield. He's got a ton of talent. It's not crazy to think he could be the MVP.
I don't think it's crazy to say that he's going to be MVP. I think it's a little bit of a stretch to say he's going to be an MVP this year. You know, coming off the injury, you know, trying to get reacclimated, trying to get over the psychological hurdle of the knees, because you can be in practice and the doctors can declare that, yeah, you know, you're 100% healthy, but there's also this psychological hurdle that you have to overcome. Think about this. Deshaun Watson is 22 years old. Jim Brown in 1958 was the last 22-year-old to win the MVP, okay? In 1984, Marino won it at 23. Deshaun will be 23 in December, okay? In September, I'm sorry. But I just believe that, you know, down the road, he's going to be all that we think he's going to be and more. You know, I've always felt that way about the guy. I just think, you know, the pressure of saying that he's going to be MVP this year, that's a little bit different. Carson Wentz experienced year one in totality and then came back and made massive improvements in year two. You know, Deshaun just didn't get the chance to finish the whole year, so his learning curve is still on the rise.
Yeah, I mean, I think the guy's special. Like Wentz, Deshaun Watson, they're cut from the same cloth. Mm-hmm. You know, they're real football people. You know, with Deshaun, the good thing is he has overcome a knee before and came back to be even better at Clemson, you know, and won a national championship there. So I think he's definitely in the MVP candidates eventually. Now, but will it happen next year? It may, because I think Houston, we're talking about their offensive talent, but I think their defense, with Romeo Crennel coaching again on defense, they'll be in the top five again. They were number one when Romeo was there and got fired somehow. That's crazy. But they bring him back, get a real coach on the sideline, and now they got a great chance. And
J.J. Watt healthy.
Yeah, get J.J. healthy. But they had all those other ones. Get the Merciless, get him back. I mean, this team can be legit again. And everybody knows if the team keeps winning, then this guy's got one heck of a shot to do it.
He has a great chance. And he's a quarterback. Having coming back from an ACL is not going to affect him like it would a running back or a receiver. He'll be fine from that perspective. Out of any young quarterback in the league, if 5 years and under, he would be the first quarterback that I take. He'd be the first. You watch him in his preseason games. That's good. I mean, he was surgical. And all his incompletions, they were drops. They were all drops.
Yeah.
The guy can flat out play. I loved him in college. I thought he should have been a first pick. Cleveland Browns messed up by not drafting him number one.
Done it again this year.
He
that's the truth.
He is the type of kid that's going to play 12, 15 years. He'll be an MVP candidate every year. This year is. The defense is going to be very tough, as you said. They're going to have a chance to win 12, 13 games. MVPs always come from the better teams in the league. Right. He has one of the top receivers in the league in DeAndre Hopkins. He's an MVP candidate every single year he's healthy.
That division is also getting stronger as well. And then the other thing you always have to take into consideration, you got Aaron Rodgers coming back. When you talk about MVPs, it's probably going to be a quarterback. You got Aaron Rodgers coming back 100%. You got Drew Brees. You've got Tom Brady's right there.
Defending champion.
Listen, I mean, you got all of these guys that's coming back. You know, a lot of times with these awards, it's like the Pro Bowl. You know, very rarely do you get your accolades in the year in which you deserve it. It's usually a year or two after you tear it up that you actually get the look that you should.
Oh, I think for Deshaun Watson, though, if he plays at a high level, if he's anywhere in the realm of playing at the same level as the other top quarterbacks and Houston is winning, I think Deshaun Watson will win the MVP. He's a great story. And I think a lot of the way the media leans right now, they'd love to have a black quarterback again like Cam Newton be the MVP. The only thing I feel the same as TJ and all you guys in terms of his talent and what he showed in a short window in the NFL, it makes me think he could possibly do it this year, but that's also what makes me think I need to hold my horses. Are we putting too much? When you gave off that stat about Jim Brown being the last 22-year-old MVP, Dan Marino being the last 23-year-old MVP, that kind of Jim Brown, Dan Marino, these are all-time greats. Mm-hmm. Deshaun Watson's played 7 games. I don't know if I need to start comparing him to Jim Brown and Dan Marino and some of the other guys.
You got
to
start somewhere. You got to start somewhere.
Not his fault that he's that young.
I want a little bit more information. All right, welcome back. Seth Joyner and Rob Ryan are back. And we're joined now by the founder of the Big League, Jason McIntyre. Let's return to my hometown, Indianapolis, where Andrew Luck just had a pretty ugly night against the Ravens that included a pick and 2 sacks. While the game had to have been disappointing for Colts fans, hoping Luck would be his old self, the quarterback actually sounded pretty satisfied after the game.
I told someone after the game, I was like, "Ah, man, I'm sort of happy to have been sacked by, you know, Suggs and a legit, like, you know, sack." I was like, "Oh, I landed on my right elbow." It's sort of reminiscent of how I injured my shoulder a couple years ago, and didn't feel anything. Didn't give it a second thought. So I think that's actually a big deal for me, you know, and being able to sort of lose that that thought bubble, if you will, that thought cycle. I'm very, very encouraged. Both one by how I feel. I feel great.
All right, Andrew Luck talking about how he feels encouraged, and I think most of that is attributed to how he feels. I don't think he should be encouraged by his actual performance. And I won't put all of that on Andrew Luck. I don't see a guy that's surrounded by a lot of playmakers. I don't really question Andrew Luck's talents, but I do question the support around him. And this, to me, so far in the preseason, hasn't been an encouraging start for him. Performance-wise,
his talent has never been the question. Listen, they drafted him with the number one pick, and they never went out and got any talent around him to help him be the quarterback that he needs to be. I love the fact that he said what he said about being sacked and falling on that elbow, reminiscent of how he hurt it the first time. Because every quarterback, or every player for that matter, who goes through a situation where they have a significant injury, and you know, they come back, they get medically clear, but this psychological hurdle that they never get over, that's the hurdle that he's talking about. Mm-hmm. Carson Wentz has got to get over that. Deshaun Watson has got to get over. All of these guys that had these injuries, they are going to, at some point in time, you heard Teddy Bridgewater talk about, I could have got down and got out of bounds, but I wanted to challenge myself. And Todd Bowles was like, well, if you want to be challenged, you want to be hit, I got a neighborhood I can drop you, and you get all the hits you want. But what he's trying to say is that I got to know that I can take a hit, that I can get hit on this leg and that it's 100% and then I'm fine. Now, let's talk about his performance. He hadn't played football for a whole year. So we expect for him to just step back in and be the Andrew Luck of old, even though there's nothing around him. He has no protection. He has no wide receivers. And the one thing that I picked up, I watched every throw that he threw last night on video. And when he's throwing against zone, he's still the Andrew Luck of old. Where he struggles is against man coverage because none of the guys that he's playing with can get open. So he's trying to fit the ball in these little windows. He's trying to complete balls where guys aren't open. And the 2 sacks, you know, the guy ran around the left tackle. He didn't even touch him. You know, Suggs just ran around the guy. And then, you know, the other pressures are situations where guys just aren't open. So I say give it some time. I expect for him to be the Andrew Luck of old.
This is a reason why I love Andrew Luck, and I'm actually encouraged by what I saw last night. For the first 3 years of his career, he missed no games, and he made lemonade out of lemons 3 straight years. Same deal. No good running backs, no good wide receivers. Last night, no running back number one, no wide receiver number one, and he still moved the ball at times well. I just feel like this is a guy who, in 2014, threw 40 TD passes, okay? This was during Big Ben's prime. Peyton Manning was still around. This is a guy who got to the AFC Championship in his 3rd year with no help, not on the offensive line. I don't think any of their defenders were factors back then. I think he'll be able to carry the team this year.
The thing is, though, the thing that makes Luck so great, besides he's such a great competitor and all that, like you've talked about, is he can throw the ball down the field. Now, these first two preseason games, he hasn't tried to yet. The first game, every ball was like 5 yards or shorter. This game, he stretched him out to about 10 yards. He hasn't let that thing go yet out down the field. And he used to hit those deep seven routes and over routes better than anybody in the league. That was his deal. Like, man, he had a gun. He'd throw it. I haven't seen him throw that yet, so maybe that's part of the process. You know, he's taking the hits, which is good. He got hit by in the first week and then definitely got hit last week. So, you know, so maybe that's the encouraging thing. But I want to see him be able to get it down the field, because if he can't, if he just can't throw the ball down the field, then Brissett's got to be the guy he can.
I don't see that as being the issue, because the one thing I know about Frank Reich and watching him work under Doug Peterson in Philadelphia, they're going to figure out a way to protect him. You protect him by throwing the little short routes, hurry right. up and get the ball out of his hand.
They had some max protection yesterday, just absolutely. Didn't look that way.
The other piece is, in order for you to push the ball down the field, you either got to be running effectively so that you can go play action, or you got to have protection, and we know he doesn't have an offensive line. So right now, they probably can't, and they also might be trying to. We got to go,
but I think Rob's point is, I just want to see.
I just want to see it too. Like, he hasn't done it yet.
Whether successful or
there's
not,
there's two preseason games he hasn't done it.
You got to have time to be able to throw it down.
All right, welcome back, Seth. Joining us here for Last Call. Let's move to New England, where Bill Belichick, architect of the most dominant dynasty in NFL history, just claimed he doesn't know how to use Netflix. Seth, are you buying this?
I think he knows what Netflix is. I don't really believe that he knows what Netflix is, to be honest with you, or I don't believe he knows how to operate it, you know, because I think he's a pure football guy.
Yeah, I think he's playing the character of a pure football guy every time he's in the media, and so this fits the character.
Okay.
If it ain't football, I don't know anything about it. Bill Belichick. If Bill Belichick has a love in his life, he knows how to use Netflix. That's the new day.
Maybe she knows how to use
Netflix.
That's
what he said. All right. To Oakland, where John Gruden was asked about his reported $100 million contract yesterday, and for some reason, he answered by saying he never thought Tom Cruise's movies were any good. Not sure what one thing has to do with the other, but Seth, are you on Team Gruden or Team Cruise here? Who's worth $100 million?
Hey, listen, man. Tom Cruise has been a hell of a lot more entertaining than John Gruden will ever be. Ever be.
I started out this morning when they brought this up. I was on Team Gruden, and then I went and they started telling me about, I had forgotten that Tom Cruise had done a few Good Men and a few other movies that I liked. And so he was in Rain Man, Born on the 4th of July. That was the last one. Team Cruise. See you tomorrow.